B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Alrighty, from the Town Fair Tire Studio, Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Actually, it's a double Murray today, as we have Joe Murray alongside as well. Show just 90 minutes today. Let you know right off the top here is the Bruins have a matinee game against the Florida Panthers over at TD Garden. Coming your way at 1 o'clock as the puck drop. Pre-game starts with Judd Surratt and Bob Beers at 12:30. Morning, Chris. Hi.
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, not a whole hell of a lot, I have to say. Last night, a perfect Friday night for yours truly. Quick after-work dinner with the lady. One giant Viking-sized beer to wash everything down. Back home on the couch with a slate of games to stare at like a big dumb zombie until I pass out on the couch. Because that's what I want with a Friday night now at this age. As I'm old and over, this is all I want. Because one of my nightmares nowadays is having Friday night plans. I just want to stuff my face. I want to go home and veg out. And last night I got to do just that with the Celtics and the slate of the NCAA tournament games and the late night Red Sox.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's pretty much what I did too. I didn't make it for the Red Sox. I didn't make it for the whole game. I watched the NCAA tournament, and obviously I watched the Celtics. But I would think you would be energized by the Baseball Reporters Show now.
Super pumped. I've said before. Now, baseball as a whole is definitely like the fourth of the four sports that I care about. The only rule changes I want to see in Major League Baseball is the 162 condensed to, 70. and have the games go a lot faster than they go. But
Sox in two, man. Sox in two gets
Actually, the Red Sox are kind of where I want to start because that game last night was compelling because if you went to bed by like the fifth inning, and I wouldn't blame you, and you're just waking up now or you're getting your day started and you tune in or you look at your phone, there's only one proper response to last night's Red Sox game, and that's, holy crap, they actually won that?
Yeah, that's the response I had when I woke up this morning.
Right, because it was weird. So there was a J.D. Martinez home run to cut it to about, I think, four runs at that point. But I was like, oh. It reminded me, I was like, oh, that's still there, that never die intangible that they had last year.
Yeah.
And then at that point, too, I was kind of wired. I was like, oh, you know what, I'll ride this out. They ended up winning the thing. 7-6 was the final in Seattle. It was another terrible start. So this has been the big concern so far in two games. And, you know, it's just a drop in the bucket, obviously, with the 162. But the two starts so far from Chris Sale on opening night, and then Nathan Eovaldi last night.
Yeah.
When you have Malik Smith taking him deep on the second pitch of the game.
Yeah, that's not good.
It's an immediate uh-oh type of feeling. And it's funny, there was a lot to get into with last night's game. Because, again, it's Eovaldi, bad start, so two bad starts. The bullpen, eh. But then Matt Barnes, of all people, ends up being the closer of the game. There's like two different points in the game as we're getting it around the seventh inning where I know I'm not alone feeling like, where's Mitch Moreland? Is Alex Cora going to put Mitch Moreland in?
It really worked out for Alex.
And Alex Cora, this was another thing that reminded me of last year. Like, he pushes the right buttons with this team. He has his finger on the pulse. It's one of the reasons that I still like the Red Sox this year to repeat as American League East champions and to go deep, and I like him better than the Yankees because he knows the feel of his club more than Aaron Boone does with the Yankees. And he was right with Mitch Moreland when he put him in the ninth last night. Compelling product, just the second game, but still a lot of concerns, I think, when it comes to their pitching.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's early, so you have to go with that. You know, guys aren't fully ramped up, and we know the Red Sox philosophy on the starters, that they'd rather have them be at full go later in the year, even if it means their velocity is down, their command is missing in the first month and a half of the season. So you have to take it with a grain of salt, but they invested a lot of money in Eovaldi, and I was one of those people who sort of felt like, look, this was the perfect deal for you. He was a rental, and he was lights out, and then you let that guy go and cash in somewhere else. I'm not sure you hand him $68 million. So sample size, obviously not large enough to draw any conclusion on Eovaldi, but if you're in my camp, after that one game, you look at it and see, this is kind of what I was worried about. The idea that, you know, this guy will sort of turn back into a pumpkin, and the bullpen was excellent. I mean, they threw four no-hit innings. I mean, guys that we sort of mocked during spring training, like Colton Brewer, you know, King Spin Rate or whatever, he was pretty good. Workman got the job done. Brian Johnson was good. And then they went to Barnes to close it out. Now, I'm still not 100% sold on Barnes, but he got the job done last night. I just wonder, Jim, like, will this be one of these games we look back on in July and be like, hey, remember that game when Eovaldi was starting and Barnes was the closer? And it's like, well, now Evaldi's the closer. And boy, you know, Core doesn't really like using Barnes in those high leverage situations. Yeah. Like, I just, great win last night for the Sox, but I'm still not sold that they've solved their bullpen problems or that Nathan Eovaldi will be in this rotation at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, there's good and bad that come out of it. That's why I find it compelling, because they still look like, I mean, look, we all know they're the strength of this team is their lineup. Like, they're a problem for any team that has to face them throughout the season. And again, that never say die thing that they had from last year, that's obviously carried over. We could see that just last night in Alex Cora's finger on the pulse and when to use guys at the right appropriate time, like he did with Moreland last night. But the starting pitching so far has been a big concern. And then, Joe, last night, too, with Matt Barnes coming in as the closer, I was just as surprised as you are. We were talking about it just before the show started. You had to figure, at least I did, that it was going to be Ryan Brazier as the closer, and then Barnes comes in, and I think that first battery starts 3-1, and it's like, oh, God, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, I thought it was Brazier. The positive thing about it is the Red Sox got the quick lead, and they made the decision quickly.
Yeah.
Like, Cora knew who he was going to go to. Barnes came in, took care of business. So that's a positive on the night, because, again, I was thinking, who's it going to be? Thought it was Brazier, Barnes first guy up, and it looked good, right? I mean, considering, yeah, you know, Kimbrel and his struggles. So far, so good.
And then there's the Celtics last night. We don't have to wait until the Sports Hub Celtics show, and like, we don't have to be all proper about it because we're only here for 90 minutes. But that last night, also great product, playoff feel.
That
last 7 minutes of the fourth quarter was like edge of your seat stuff.
It was great. It was a very compelling basketball game. And I look at it, and I feel like the Celtics got the result that they needed, but I still feel like there's some underperformance there. Like, when I'm looking at the rosters and I'm watching that game, my reaction is like, how the heck are the Pacers still in this game? I'm looking at the talent. I'm like, the Celtics have superior talent with Oladipo out. They should be blowing these guys out. And I don't want to penalize the Celtics for not blowing them out, but if you're the Pacers, do you leave that game and you're like, oh man, I hope we don't run into the Celtics in the postseason. If they have home court, we have no chance. Aren't you leaving that game if you're the Pacers and saying, if Thaddeus Young makes that layup, we probably win?
Yeah, and there was I think it was like 5:26 left. It was 5 and change, and was Jaylen Brown hit that, what felt like a dagger three.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, there's your game.
Yeah.
And then a couple of minutes later, not even, I was like, how the hell is he tied again?
I felt that the whole game. I'm like, how are the Pacers staying in this?
Yeah, they you know, the comparison has been that they've been what the Celtics were the last couple of years. And it's pretty fair. That team has balls, too. And you don't want to understand where the hell it's even coming from. Without Oladipo, there's some gutty players there. You know, Turner's a good player.
Yeah.
Bogdanovich. But still, like, I don't understand how the hell they're doing it.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, they've lost 10 in a row on the road. So obviously they're sort of succumbing to their lack of talent a little bit. But they do squeeze. Here's the interesting juxtaposition for me. That Pacers team, they squeeze every ounce of talent out of the roster. Do you feel that way about the Celtics?
No, not at all. Yeah. They've been, you wrote the appropriate column this week comparing them to the 2011 Red Sox. And there's no other comparison, because, at least in this city, because in terms of the talent, the expectations, and the disappointment level that they've given you so far, it's almost 1-1.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, again, kudos to the Celtics. That was a tight, taut game. They needed that win, and they got it. They executed down the stretch. You know, Kyrie Irving, I think, deserves a ton of credit for the way he played in the fourth quarter. And on that final layup, it wasn't just a defensive breakdown from the Pacers. I mean, he made Thaddeus Young look silly by faking a pass to the corner to Jason Tatum. And Thaddeus Young had no idea what was going on. Irving created that lane to the basket and then made the layup. I mean, that's why Irving's on your team, and that's why you're a better team when he's out there. But I still sort of look at that one, and I feel like the Celtics have to get better than they played last night if they want to make a deep playoff run. You know, they still have to get better. That was a step in the right direction, but you can't sort of declare, okay, we've arrived, here we are. No, there's still more room for improvement.
And the other thing out of last night that I get to, though, as much as I really don't believe all that much in the Celtics, a first-round series with the Pacers is going to be entertaining. Like, unless Philadelphia completely tanks here down the stretch, and I don't expect them to, it's essentially a lock that the Celtics are going to get the Pacers here in that first round. And obviously, it still has yet to be determined who's going to have home court there. But now tied for the 4 seed, the Celtics and the Pacers with the Celtics win last night. But no matter where it is, Chris, I feel like you're getting at least six games in that series. Like that Pacers team, again, they got balls. They are not going away. And that particular point where the Celtics go on a 7-0 run, Brown hits that three-pointer, I felt like it's a dagger. And then you get a 6-0 run that the Pacers counter with. And again, it's tied at 105. It's like, what is happening? So at the very least, I think this first round is going to be entertaining.
Oh, definitely. I mean, the Pacers play hard. I think it's, you know, it's a pretty good matchup. And it's one of those things where I think for the Celtics to win that series, I think they will acquire a toughness and a mental fortitude that I think Stevens has been searching for and trying to impart to the team all year long. In a lot of ways, I think the Pacers are the ideal first round opponent for the Celtics. They really don't have the talent to beat them, but they do have the mentality to push them. And I think that's what the Celtics need. I think they need to be pushed. And the Pacers can obviously do that. My one other concern from that game was, I thought the Celtics played great on offense. I thought they moved the ball pretty well. I thought they had balanced scoring. I was impressed with all that. That was all good. But the defense, again, I mean, 112 points to that Pacers team. I look at that and I say, you should have been able to clamp down when you needed to. And they just seem to have a hard time putting teams away, which is weird for a team with as much talent as they have. You would think that they would be able to just step on the throat of a team, and they seem to have a hard time doing that, particularly this second half of the season or post-All-Star break at home. You know, Sacramento got back in the game. Atlanta came all the way back against them. You know, this is a game where the Pacers just got to hang around and hang around and hang around. They just don't seem to be able to put teams away.
No, they don't. And it's, you know, we had B-Rob with us, I think it was last week, where he was explaining how bad the defense has been essentially since February 1st, especially in the fourth quarter. And it's been a real problem, and it's not just one guy. It's systematic. And just a minute on the tournament games. Let me tell you, I didn't think I would enjoy it this much, because when I first announced I was going to be rooting for Duke, it made my skin crawl. I didn't want to look at myself in the mirror. I typically don't want to anyway because of, you know, just the horrors of my life, Chris. But
Atlanta took a lot out of you.
It really did.
I know.
But I enjoy watching Zion Williamson so much. I was like, you know what? But besides what I'm always rooting for, and that's, you know, the schadenfreude of the whole thing and the tears of the children and the people in
the cheerleaders
crowd.
Crying.
Yeah, all that
That's
stuff.
What you love.
But Zion is so transcendent. I love watching it. I want to see Duke go deep. I've now enjoyed it because people hate Duke so much. It's such a great heel turn. And that finish last night, oh, Virginia Tech, you choking dogs. They had an opportunity to send that thing into overtime, and the kid misses a bunny. You idiot. Oh, and the outcry on social media late at night. Oh, it was so great. I enjoy it so much, Joe. And I know you've been taking a beating for the most part, too. I've been listening to
It's been bad.
The over-under podcast.
It's all favorites. That's the thing.
Yeah. They're not covering. They're winning the game. Duke last night did not cover. And if you saw the Kentucky game, 3-point favorites, they won by 4. So, like, if you had I had Houston last night.
But was it you or Lifshatz that had? Did you both have Auburn in the upset?
Dan had it, but Bruce Pearl, I'm sorry. Say whatever you want about that guy. That is a guy I would run through a wall for, and he's got these guys playing. And I hate to go on a BC rant, but think about all the schools around here that can get into the tournament and BC can't. And BC wouldn't even sniff Bruce Pearl when he was available.
Well,
and now he takes Auburn
history
all the way?
Yeah, you know, they sort of hold their nose at guys like that. You know, that's the thing. And I know the connection there is all modern, the whole thing. But, you know, what went down at Tennessee, there's no way he'll ever coach at BC. There's no way they will ever. I mean, it's the whole.
Then they,
you know,
won't be successful.
Yeah, you know.
That's just what it is.
They want to be, you know, Harvard academically. And
we have our standards.
Above it all. And yeah. I mean, it's college basketball.
Auburn's got some good standards.
You
got
to get your hands dirty if you got to get your hands dirty if you want to win. You think Coach K has never gotten his hands dirty?
Oh, come on, of those great programs,
especially
after
that, after that back surgery. Look up some of the guys that ended up going to Duke after he had that back surgery that year, and they missed the tournament. The following year, suddenly Corey Maggette and William Avery were on the team, and William Avery declared for the NBA draft not because he thought he was good enough, but because he had flunked out of Duke.
All right, so we're opening up here on really pretty much everything from last night, from the Red Sox and that comeback win in Seattle, 7-6 the final there. Nice finish for Kyrie Irving, the Celtics, as they overcome the Pacers last night at home in any of the NCAA games. Really, whatever you want here, because we're only here for 90 minutes today. It's Gasper Murray, 617-779-0985. It is 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
And a 2-0. To Mitch Moreland. There's a shot. Line to right. Haniger back. It's gone! Moreland off the bench. A 3-run shot here in the ninth inning, and the Red Sox lead it 7-3.
7-6.
Definitely not ideal. You know, when you get to that situation or think you might be in it, you just try to prepare the best you can and be ready for it when it comes and be familiar with the situation. And, you know, that's kind of my game plan going into it.
And Mitch Moreland with the shot in the ninth, putting the Red Sox up 7-6, and that's how it ended. So, again, if you're just waking up, and you're like, wait, what? The Red Sox won that game? Yeah, they actually won that game. Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Actually, Gasper and Murray's. We have Joe Murray alongside as well. Caught between a Murray sandwich over here, Chris. Oh, you had another bad start. Now two in a row. Chris Sale, blech, in the opener. Last night, Nathan Eovaldi. Not great. But it is funny, like, you know, one of the things you can hang your hat on so far with this Red Sox team and how they compare to last year, it's that never say die thing. One of the quotes I'm looking at from Eduardo Nunez after last night's game, we're talking about the second game of the season, saying we felt like this was a playoff game. We forgot this was the second game of the season. We wanted that W so bad. Team's got balls.
And that's awesome.
That starts with Alex Cora.
Yeah, really that's definitely the mentality that's instilled by the manager. There's no question about it. And for them to have that type of approach this early in the season speaks to what type of team they are. And you definitely have to give them credit for that. I mean, it's so easy, second game of the year, to say, not our night, 0-2, we're the defending World Series champs, no big deal, forget about it. You know, we'll see you Saturday night. And instead, they clawed back and won that game.
And, yeah, it's the Mitch Moreland thing, too. So you heard him there in the quote coming back. It's frustrating. He's talking about having to be a pinch hitter. And, two, like, I just felt, you know, around the seventh inning, there was a couple of times it's like, bring him in. And he waited until the ninth. It obviously worked out. But, again, Alex Cora, I think, might be the most important part of the Red Sox here from last season into this one so far, just two games in. How many home runs, though? Were there 19 dongs last night? You were on with Christian Arcee. Did you guys do the dong report last night, Joe?
We certainly did the dong report last night. Red Sox had a bunch. Just one thing, you were talking about like them wanting to get the win last night. Their starters, Sale and Eovaldi, I saw Alex Speer tweeted out last night that the first team in the live ball era whose two starters have given up 6-plus runs and 3 homers in the first two games of the season.
Ugh. Wow.
Well, and it's Sale and Eovaldi.
Yeah. But look at some of the guys hitting these home runs. Again, Malik Smith on the second pitch of the game for Eovaldi last night. So I already quickly have a theory two games into the season. I think Charlie in Arlington also feels the same way, and that's that the ball is juiced. Hey, Charlie?
Oh, hey, guys. Yeah, ball is definitely juiced this year. I think they want to get the home runs up, which is pretty clear when these little guys are hitting home runs. So, yeah, but that. So the other reason I called, so three things, actually. Nunez needs to understand that you're supposed to make it more difficult for the guys to throw to the to first base. Just wanted to point that out.
Yep.
Not easier and not twice on the same play. But anyway, so Chris, you had mentioned that you thought the Celtics offense last night looked pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah, relatively, I guess you could say so. But I got to tell you, that entire offense this entire year, to me, has just been so rudimentary and just so boring and so one-dimensional at times, where guys stand around constantly. Ball doesn't move. I watch other games, and I see other teams, and teams that aren't even as good as the Celtics, by the way, whose offenses just seem so much more fluid. That offense stagnates game after game, and I blame Stevens for it. And the other thing I want to mention is Danny Ainge hasn't gotten any criticism for not giving Brad Stevens some seasoned coaching help that he could have put on that bench for him. Since, you know, whether it was this year or last year, he has nobody to lean on in terms of somebody that could have given him some advice, especially in coaching some of these veterans.
Yeah, but you know, why would that be on Danny, though? Like, you're basically saying that Danny should come in and say, Brad, I'm putting this person on your staff, whether you want him or not.
Well, they did it with Alex Cora. I mean, to me, I think that's something that would help him and sort of, you know, give him an opportunity to sort of bounce things off guys, and just get some leadership in areas of where he clearly has some development issues in terms of coaching these types of guys, especially in the pro ranks. And I think he would have probably welcomed it. So,
yeah, he might have. You could be right. And I agree with you, it would help. But I think just foisting a coach on Brad Stevens is not the way to do it. I mean, you'd have to talk to him about it. He'd have to pick that person. And Alex Cora, sure, Alex Cora was a rookie manager, though. I mean, Brad Stevens is not a rookie coach. He's taken his team to the Eastern Conference Finals the last 2 years. And Kyrie was on the team last year. So it's not like this was the first year with Kyrie, even though it's felt like that a lot of times because it's the first year where they have everybody. because Gordon Hayward's there. And a lot of stuff changed last year with the young players. But it's not like Stevens is an inexperienced coach.
And so I just want to reference something because the caller was talking about Eduardo Nunez, who again had those great quotes after the game too, that we felt like it was a playoff game. We really wanted to win it. But in case you didn't watch, and it was around 1 in the morning when this happened last night, so I wouldn't blame you if you didn't stay up for this. One of the most boneheaded plays you ever watched in your entire life from Eduardo Nunez. Here's how it broke down. Bases loaded, one out, tying run on second. Eduardo Nunez is at the plate. And Nunez somehow grounds into a 1-2-3 double play because he doesn't run through the path. He ducks. The pitcher actually plays the ball, and he's right in front of him, and he ducks?
Yeah.
Like, dude, what? Huh?
Yeah.
It was mind-blowing. Like,
I know.
This is something I don't even know if you would see at, like, the little league level. Never mind from a veteran Major League Baseball
player.
It
was weird. It was definitely weird. And you want to at least make him make the throws, right?
Right. Yeah. So
for a guy who loves to beat up his body,
yeah.
He does nothing on that play. Like, he should have ran through the pitcher, you know what I mean?
So, very, very strange. But again, we'll take your calls on pretty much anything here. We're only here until 12:30 today as we have the Bruins matinee against the Florida Panthers. Pre-game comes to you in just about an hour. Let's go to Cam in Taunton with his thought of the day. Hey, Cam.
How's it going today, guys? Jim, you know, I heard you and Mike talking this week. What means more for the Patriots? Their next quarterback or one more championship? For me, the answer is easy. You get their next quarterback, you still don't know. You could. What if your next quarterback's Matthew Stafford? And he's good. And he can keep it competitive, but you're not going to win anything. And, you know, and Mike said yesterday, what's the difference between 6 and 7? There's a big difference. Here's what it is. It's the Bulls and Jordan. You get 7, the team's ahead of the Bulls, and Brady's ahead of Jordan. That's why 7 means more than the next quarterback, at least to me. What do you feel about that?
Oh, I agree completely, Cam. I want all the titles now. I'm very greedy. I am a glutton. I keep going back for seconds and seconds. This is why I'm bad at a buffet. I want all of it until I nearly want to pop. And those guys, Felger and Maz, they keep saying the most important thing is the next quarterback.
No, I disagree.
I agree a little bit in that you want to have someone that you're going to continue to groom here in the time that you have remaining with Tom Brady.
But that's real greed on their end, though.
Right, because they want it all decade.
It's like 20 years of competing for championships isn't enough. I want 20 to be 35. Like, to me, that's greed. Asking for a 7th championship within your 20-year window, I don't think that's greed.
No, and I want to see them continue to maximize the time remaining with Tom Brady and build around him. Now, if you can still get Josh Rosen, if they like Josh Rosen, this is what it comes down to.
Okay.
If they're into Josh Rosen, and that was rumored from, I forget the draft Knicks name that was on Fox Sports 1 this week, but apparently it's the Patriots, the L.A. Chargers, and the Giants that have interest in Josh Rosen. They would trade for him, and one of those teams, didn't name which one, have offered a second-round draft pick. I have to believe it's the Giants, because at least Eli Manning, he looks completely done, unlike Brady, who still, I think, has a couple of few viable years left. But if they really like him, I would be okay with them moving that 32nd.
Yeah, I would be okay with that. So I like Josh Rosen. I liked him a lot coming out of UCLA. Didn't have a great offensive line there. I would have some concerns about his concussion history at UCLA. I mean, he took some huge hits, and basically his year ended the last year he was there because they didn't want to put him back out on the field because of concussions. But you can't really evaluate the guy and what happened last year in Arizona. And I like a lot of the traits he has. I mean, he has the ability to make NFL throws and NFL accuracy. I mean, he showed that. And he basically carried a team at UCLA. So, I'm give that guy to Josh McDaniels. Josh McDaniels has certainly done more with lesser players.
Yeah, but overall, though, no, I want all the titles for Brady.
Yeah,
I want a 7th. I want an 8th. And then we'll worry about the future later, please. And I said, too, like, if you were to ask... Say Peyton Manning ended up staying with the Colts. And I think if you put a gun to the head of any Colts fan and said, what would you have rather had? One more with Peyton Manning here with the Colts or, you know, this time with Andrew Luck? I think
they'd probably say Peyton.
Most would say another title with Peyton Manning
rather
than seeing him go and take steroids and win another one with the Denver Broncos.
You had to throw that in there.
Please. Yeah. Well, I mean, come on. Let's call a spade here. All right,
those are for his wife, Jim.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, she needed them. Uh-huh. Again, we'll take your calls on pretty much everything. But a big night last night. Big comeback win for the Red Sox. Nice win for the Celtics. Any NCAA tournament games, you want to talk about those. Patriot stuff as well. 617-779-0985 is the phone number if you want to join the show. Joe Murray's going to get you caught up, though, with the latest, given the scores from last night here in the Sports Hub headlines. And then right back to you here on Gasper and Murray.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Count 3-2. Meanwhile, to Edwin Encarnacion. Out out to center field and well hit. Bradley can only watch and it's gone.
Again, I don't think low 90s is where anybody's going to be concerned.
Just an interesting thing to point out. Did Tim Beckham get him again?
If you compare it to the first start last year, velocity-wise, he hit a few, 94, but, you know, last year it wasn't 97, 98 either. I do think he tried to go to certain spots and he didn't get it there. Like I said, you know, it wasn't a good one. We have to turn the page. He'll be ready for the next one.
No, I felt fine. I've done this enough. I should be able to go out there and get it done with no matter how many starts I have, what kind of stuff I have that day. You know, I expect a lot out of myself and a lot better than that.
So I want to go back to the Red Sox opener, the 12-4 loss beatdown, really. The hands of the Mariners a couple of nights back. Gasper and Murray, 98.5, a sports hub, and the bad start by Chris Sale. If they give him this extension, he goes out there, gives up 7 runs in 3 innings, 3 home runs. Not great, and I know it definitely made me feel a wee bit vindicated and looking at that at the time, Chris, and saying, well, this is why. If you're like me, you say, just wait until after the season. Granted, one game, obviously a very small sample size in the grand scheme of things, but with the velocity and how it was in the low 90s, a little bit concerning. But Maz broke this down last night on the Baseball Reporter Show, 6 p.m. here on 98.5 of Sports Hub. The velocity was around the same point where it was last year at this time, too. So you know what it leads me to believe? They're just trying to, I think that whether it was Dana Lavangi or Alex Cora or just, you know, the brass as a whole said, you know what? Don't push yourself this early in the season. We need you to preserve yourself as we go along here. And I don't really mind that. But still, that wasn't great.
No, it definitely wasn't. I mean, he threw, you know, I think Alex Spear had this. There were 30 four-seam fastballs. He didn't get a swing and miss on any of them. I mean, that's not Chris Sale. So there's not enough of a sample size to make a determination one way or the other. But there are two possible outcomes. The one you mentioned, which is it's exactly like last year. They're just ramping him up slowly. And by the time we get to July, he'll be throwing like 99, 100. That's great. That's best case scenario. However, given the way last year ended, you can't rule out the fact that this is just a continuation of last year when his velocity was down at the end of the year and that this is like the new normal for him. So I think those are two pretty different scenarios. You know, one is like the guy's basically going to win the Cy Young. The other one is you just signed a guy to be an ace who no longer has ace stuff.
Yeah, and I just don't see what the harm would have been in waiting. Like, okay, the cost would have went up. You're the Red Sox. You can afford it. Like, with his breakdown the last couple of seasons, how the velocity's gone down, the real scare with his shoulder, and granted, he didn't go under the knife, but that was a real scare last year. Like, what's the harm in waiting? Why not?
Well, I mean, look, part of the harm could be, and with Chris Sale, this maybe would not be true, because I get the sense that he's not driven by getting every last dollar. But maybe they feel like if he gets off to a good start, the price goes up. I mean, you're sort of buying low, in their mind at least, and I think really across baseball, you're buying low on a premium asset. And if you can do that at that time and then he gets back to what he is, then you feel pretty good about the contract. If he goes out in the first 3 months of the year, he pitches the way he did when he was healthy last year and dominates, then who has the leverage? It's Sale. So I think the Red Sox looked at it and said, well, we have the leverage because he's coming off an injury. Let's use it. Let's sign him.
Let's go to Dan in Cranston. Let's talk about Chris Sale. Dan, you're next here on Gasper Murray. Hi.
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
Good.
I'll make it quick on Sale. Real quick, what age was Pedro pretty much finished being dominating? Was it early 30s, 32? Something like that, maybe?
I believe, yeah, around that.
I mean, I'd have to look it up in terms of what age, but I would, you know, I would say like he was no longer dominating by like what, 03?
Yeah.
I just don't think it, I think there's a good comp there because it's the same body size. But, Jim, you're so right in terms of, you know, why sign the guy? I mean, you had the own open his stupid mouth. We screwed up the Lester thing, so we're not going to do that again. But, they, you know, they were in two different places. You know, they didn't have an extra year with Lester at that time. And it's just, I don't understand it. He's just the perfect type of candidate to break down. You're already in knee-deep with Price. You spent the money on Evaldi. I just don't get it. You know, they better win in the next year or two because I think they're doomed with these guys all over 30, and I think it's just going to come back to haunt them. They're going to have bad contracts again. I want to go to Gronk real quick.
Sure.
I think he's the same age as Travis Kelce, okay? I know you made a great point, I think, Chris, during the playoffs, why he was so dominant. Well, he had 2 weeks to prepare each time.
Yeah, well,
right?
In two of the three he did, yeah.
Yeah, two out of three. And I just can't imagine. I think we're going to hear stories all summer long. He's going to be in and out of the stadium. He's still probably going to see Guerrero doing his thing. He's still going to be working out. I just can't see that he's not taking snaps again, you know, after week 10. Patriots maybe a 6-4, 7-3. They're kind of struggling. They need him. You know what I mean? It's just, it's so set up that way. He's still got some good football left as long as it's limited. And I think there's almost 100% chance that he's going to be playing again.
Thanks for the call, Dan. Yeah, at 29 years old, and hold your thoughts on it, Chris, because that was the big news from earlier in the week, and it now feels like a month ago that Rob Gronkowski retires. He posted on Instagram, and just like that, he's done. He's put on the retired list, and now they have the rum on the roster, and Gronk's done. But can he come back again? I tend to agree with the caller. When he gets rest, there's still some football left in that body. So we'll get to that. Greg Schiano abruptly leaving the Patriots this week, and we'll get some other football stuff as well, like the rule changes when it comes to pass interference, and now you can review those. That sounded like they put a lot of thought into that. We'll get to that coming up in our long commercial-free segment that will segue into the Sports Hub Celtics show. If you're hanging, we'll get to you as well here on Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hasn't even been officially announced as the defensive coordinator. There instead was just an announcement that he is, in fact, resigning to focus more on his family and his faith. And when you talk to people close to the situation, they say a couple things. First of all, this is something that he, Schiano, has been mulling for the last 2 weeks or so. So the Patriots have been aware of this. Bill Belichick has been aware of this. And he said in a statement, Belichick did, that this is something that he supports, essentially Schiano stepping away from the football field to focus on a family situation. Unclear what that is, described to me as private. Either way, the Patriots now need a new defensive coordinator. Perhaps we'll see Bill Belichick take a much more heavy-handed role in the defense rather than name a DC this year. They have that. Plus, they got to fill a bunch of staff positions on the defense as well.
NFL Network's Ian Rappaport with a little bit more insight as to why Greg Schiano abruptly stepped down as the Patriots defensive coordinator. Although, as he pointed out, it was never officially announced. But that was a bit of a surprise late in the week. Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So let's run through some of the Patriots and football stuff here before we get into the Sports Hub Celtics show quickly, as we have an abbreviated show. Only goes till 12:30 today as the Bruins have a matinee against the Panthers. All right, so the Greg Schiano news. Surprised, and where do they go from here?
I'm a little surprised because it seemed like he was a certified FOB, friend of Bill, guy you bring in. Bill feels good about it, and sort of a nice bridge between the Belichicks, Bill and Steven, and maybe eventually sort of groom Steven to take over. So now where do you go from there? You know, I don't know. I mean, does Bill basically take over as de facto defensive coordinator? Brett Bielema was sort of running around telling people he thought he was going to get the job before they brought in Schiano. Does he go to him now? Does he have enough experience? He was only here for 1 year and was, you know, a coaching assistant, essentially. It's really unclear what they do. I don't think anybody's going to get the title, but Flores didn't get the title, and he was the defensive coordinator. Yep. So you can't read too much into that. I think they'll have to figure it out and maybe hire another coach here. But I think some of the guys that have been here who are younger, like DeMarcus Covington and Steven Belichick, are going to be the guys that do a lot of the defensive coordinator duty.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Bill hasn't fully done it himself since 2010. Has it been that long? Is it around that time?
Probably. I mean, that, I'm trying to think sort of what the timeline was of defensive coordinators as they've gone through it, you know, post-Dean Pease. And I believe that's correct off the top of my head. But there's always been, sort of, like, even before Patricia got it, it's like you knew they were grooming Patricia for, and the way they moved him around the staff, like, hey, you're going to coach safeties, you know, because he already had experience with linebackers. Sure. Bill likes somebody to have experience with sort of every level of the defense before they get that title, or at least that responsibility for a year, and then they get the title.
It doesn't feel like there's anything, like, nefarious behind it, which I don't like. I talked to Ben Volen. I got to do a spot on Boston Sports Tonight a few nights ago, and obviously he covered the team as well as anybody else, and he's like, no, he's like, I think it's just what he said. It's like a family-related thing, and I heard Bert Breer on with Tucker and Rich yesterday. He essentially said the same thing, and it's like, come on, where's the dirt? All right, so he's gone, but still a little bit weird in regard to the timing, and I just, maybe it's as simple as that.
Well, it could
because
be.
Look, the 20-hour days are about to ramp up here. You know, well, he was at the combine. Yeah. Now we're getting to the draft. Now the work begins. And maybe he thought, like, oh, the hell with this.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, he coached in the NFL before, and so he has some idea what that grind is. But most of his experience is as a college coach, and he was at Ohio State. the last couple of years. And so to go, you're not only going back to the NFL, but now you're working for Bill Belichick, one of the most demanding coaches in the league with one of the smallest staffs, which means you're going to have more responsibility. Maybe it doesn't, it just was too much for him. You know, I don't know. Or maybe he had too much fun in Indianapolis.
Good, Chris. I don't know why. Michael Bennett stuff.
Yeah.
He said about Schiano, and I don't know, the Rutgers guy still here in the mix. Like, I think this is a good thing for the Patriots.
I do too.
That could be true.
I couldn't understand how the hell that was going to work between him and Michael Bennett. I mean, Michael Bennett has pretty much thrown this guy under the bus at any opportunity.
True.
What about Gerard Mayo, the addition of Mayo? I mean, I know he's going to be the linebackers coach, but is that somebody that eventually could possibly take over the reins?
Definitely. But I mean, Gerard's super smart, but he has no coaching experience. And I think the biggest adjustment for him will be as many hours as those players put in, and it's more than anybody realizes, the coaches put in double. And so what's that lifestyle like? You know, Gerard has young kids. What is that like? And is it something he wants to commit himself to for years and years and years? It's not for everybody.
All right, for the both of you, Gronk's retirement earlier this week. I don't think it was that big of a surprise. It felt like he was leaning that way. But is there any chance of a comeback?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I definitely think there's a chance of a comeback. I think it was a hard decision for him. And even his agent said he thought he was leaning towards coming back. He had to give the Patriots a decision. I would not be surprised if Gronk got the itch, you know, come October, started ramping up, and you see him in November, and he plays it out from there.
I think he's done. I wouldn't be surprised, but at the same time, I think he's done. And I think they do have to have some sort of future plan at tight end. They have nothing right now. And I don't know, there's some names out there. Maybe Zach Ertz could be available. I don't know how you feel about that. Would O.J. Howard, you know, with Tampa Bay having multiple
those
tight
guys
ends.
Why would those guys be available?
That's the thing. I mean, there's two tight ends. Philly drafted Goddard.
Goddard.
So, yeah. I mean, those are just two guys that are available. But I think the draft probably is the way that they should go.
Yeah,
I don't think they'll find another block. Maybe they'll find another blocking guy, but they won't find a guy who can do both, at least right off
the bat. It is a pretty good tight end draft, though. I mean, you know, again, you're not going to find a Gronk. I mean, people like this T.J. Hockenson kid from Iowa, but I don't think he's Gronk. But if you could get a tight end who could replace some of his production in the passing game, like we've seen what the Patriots do, if they want a tight end who can block his butt off, they'll just take a backup tackle and put him in as a tackle eligible. We've seen them do that before. You can figure that out. It's, can you find somebody who can catch the ball in the passing game?
Do you think he purposely put the screws to Bill in regard to the timing?
No, I don't. I think he was grappling with the decision. You know, I think he was really leaning towards retiring the whole time during the season. And then the postseason happened, and he was closer to himself. They won. He had a huge impact. But again, as I said all along, like, if you're him, you have to take that with a grain of salt. Two of the three games, you had 2 weeks to prepare. That's not what it's going to be for the grind of the regular season. And so somebody probably got to him and said, you know, I know you feel really good about the way last year ended, but just remember what the grind of the regular season was like for you.
Yeah, and this is why I'm with Joe. I think he's done. You know, there's still some football left in that body. 29 years old. Yeah, like it almost feels like, as a fan, I can understand why you feel like a little bit ripped off. But for him, the guy's taking a beating. He's had many back surgeries since college?
It's at least four.
You know, so I think he is done. The interference rule. Now you can challenge pass interference. And within 2 minutes, it goes up to the booth now. Your thoughts on the new rule change, which felt like, boy, let me tell you, it sounds like they really put a lot of thought and work into this thing before they passed it at the owners' meetings this week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just seems like it was simply appeasing the coaches. And, you know, I said this yesterday on Felger and Maz. What's more disconcerting to me is the motivation behind this. It's people coming up with rules that are based around games they lost. And if the Saints had won that game in overtime, Sean Payton was on the competition committee. I don't think he's ramming this rule through and advocating for it the way that he did at the owners' meeting. So I just sort of feel like you can't just have like ad hoc rules making based on, well, we lost on this, so we have to fix it. Like, you can say, let's look at this and make it right and we'll study it. But it can't just be, we lost on this, something has to be implemented now. Damn the consequences. Damn, you know, what's unforeseen. Just change the rules so I can make sure, you know, I never lose on this again. Like, I just think you can't run a league like that. You can't have a bunch of self-serving rules.
That's what Kansas City was trying to do with the overtime rule.
And they're not done. We'll see what happens at the spring meeting.
Ugh. So that gets tabled until the spring meetings in May. But I'm glad for now that didn't get passed. This interference thing is going to be so stupid. So stupid. What happened in the NFC Championship game was egregious. And I can understand the uproar. At the time, I was like, jail these refs. Something has to change. You should have, Maz has alluded to this, like one of these, like a super challenge that you really get to only use once. You keep it in your back pocket for the worst possible moment for something like happened in the NFC Championship game to the Saints. So you can use it there. You look back and you use common sense, apply it to a crucial play, and you change it. This, it's too loose. It's way too loose.
Yeah.
But I
don't like the idea of challenging calls that are inherently super subjective. I just think that's a real can of worms there. I mean, you could call, and Richard Sherman said this too. Here's another issue. Richard Sherman says this. I thought he was right. He basically was saying, well, now they can manipulate the outcome of the games. Now, do I really think they're going to do that? No. But is Sherman right when he says that? It's going to create that perception that somebody in New York wants the Cowboys to win this game. So on this 50-50 call where they threw a flag and there was no, you know, the challenge flag, I mean, and there was no flag on the field for interference, suddenly there is. And it's a 40-yard gain to the other team's 4-yard line with 15 seconds to play. I mean, it's going to create the idea that, especially with legalized gambling and all that stuff, that this stuff's not on the up and up.
I'm glad you brought that up, as we have one half of the Bankroll Boys here, host of the Over-Under podcast, Joe Murray. Occasionally hear him also on Tutcher and Ridge. What are the Vegas implications with this rule change?
Huge. Huge. I mean, again, and there's other stuff that's trying to come down the line with onside kicks and things like that. But yeah, I think that's the one thing is that, like, what happened in the championship game was egregious. But do you really feel that way about anything else, truly? Because I'm fine with the way the game is.
Me too.
But this is going to have a huge impact now. And at the end, we're watching it in college basketball now. How many times do they go to a review watch it? It's going to be worse in football. And it's something we're going to be talking about for seven days until the next game goes, or even longer than that.
The fix is just better officiating. Like, just do your job. Yeah. That's the fix.
I also think it's gonna take away from people's fandom. You're not going to know when to cheer. So Hail Mary happens. And typically, like, you know, the guy comes down with the ball. Immediately, your response is like, ah! Now it's, I got to wait here. They got to look at it.
Like, and it could be like the greatest play in history, too. We don't know if we can celebrate it.
Like the Hail Flutie.
Yeah. Right, hold on. They got to look at this thing here.
Oh, Phelan pushed off. Oh, never mind. Forget about it.
I hate it. All right, so we have about a half hour to go here, and it is time for the Sports Hub Celtics show, like it normally is here, noon on Saturday. So we'll get to the Celtics' big win over the Pacers last night, 114-112, right after the Sports Hub headlines here with Joe Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.